Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Data Power, SLA Appliances, and XSLT Part 1 of 2 Tools. Today's presenter is Herman Stemwilbert. Herman joined the IBM WebSphere Data Power team in April 2007. The first year, he was part of the worldwide Level 3 support team. Later, he worked as developer in the XML compiler team of Data Power. Within this team, he is responsible for the six-pack work related to the XML compiler since then. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Herman.
Hello. I want to give today's presentation as part one of two because the complete presentation was too big for one webcast. Today we will focus on the tools aspect of the XSLT processing on Data Power SOA appliances. Maybe please switch to the next slide. This is the agenda for today. Today we will talk about Data Power tools, split up into built-in tools which are already available in Data Power, and tools which are added, may be found in TechNotes or in the Data Power forums. And the very important aspect of this two webcasts is that this presentation you have in hand is complete in the sense that either you find the information in the links which will be shown below the different slides, or you will find what is not generally available in the appendix. So whatever you see in this presentation, you will be able to get it and to try it out. That's the most important aspect of this presentation, that you are able to try it yourself with your boxes. So next slide, please. Now we are on slide three. First, a little internal tool which is not directly available, but the basics are available. Between Data Power releases 3.7 and 3.8, there was a change in the UIs used to reference different services in Data Power. In most of the UIs in 3.7x firmware releases are so-called bookmarklets, which means they are little programs thought as a URI, as a bookmark, mostly starting with JavaScript colon something. And with 3.8.0, the bookmarklets have been replaced by bookmarks. The problem with the bookmarks is that the actual box where you sort the bookmark from is explicitly part of the bookmark. So you see the red line in the first section, HTTPS, your box, web report, status, style sheet, caching summary. The good thing is you can use the bookmarklet to directly call the functionality, in this case, get the style sheet cache page, which is really important. The bad thing is that it's only for one box, so if you have many boxes, you would need many different bookmarks for that. The solution I wanted to present here is if you just replace the red part of the bookmark by the blue part, then you will get a bookmarklet. So what you do is, I have two directories in my browser, a 3.7 and a 3.8 directory, and all important bookmarks I just bookmark as one normally does by save bookmark as. And then you can edit the 3.8 bookmarks and do the replacement. Just remove the red part and insert the blue part. And after that, the bookmark is a bookmarklet, which works for every box. There is one tool which is a bookmark for both releases. So even for 3.7, you don't have always bookmarklets. And the tool is the XPath tool we will talk later about, which is important. And it's really deeply hidden in Data Power, so you need to open many screens in order to just open this tool. So this bookmark is really important to have to get this tool up easily. All these bookmarklet techniques have been checked to work for Firefox, Internet Explorer, Chrome, and Safari browsers. The link at the bottom is the DeveloperWorks Data Power Forum posting I created on this subject, where you can find more details. So now we change to slide number 4. The next 2 slides will be on stylesheet profiling, a very important tool to improve the performance of stylesheets and to analyze the performance of stylesheets. Perhaps the stylesheet is perfect, perhaps not. Profiling is, like in every other development language, the tool used to find out which part of the program in data core, in the case the stylesheet or the variables, takes most of the time, how often it is called and all that stuff. First, how do we configure a profiling for a stylesheet? We have to define a compile options policy in the XML manager and to define a matching rule for the profile rule. Then sending any request against the service containing the stylesheet gives profiling information, but that is not visible. And this information may be looked up in the web GUI under status XML processing stylesheet profiles. What you get, if you go there, you can see on the right side of this page, you get the name of the XML manager, which is responsible for this output, the output mode, whether it's streaming or not, and you get a URL, a name, you see a match for star, it's a top-level element, or for calc offset, then you get the location. Most of these files reside in the local file system. You get the file name and the line number. You get the count, which is the number of times this function is called, the style, the template is called. You get the type, and you see we have types template and global var. Global var are global variables, and we get the time in milliseconds, which is good enough to get analysis in good detail. Two important things, if you want to reset the whole measurements, you can just flush the XML manager and all counts go down to zero, and you can send requests again and start at zero. And a very cool concept is the data power extension element, DP profile, which allows you to not only do measurements for complete templates, but for any section of a template. You can just put a DP profile around any section, and this section will be profiled in addition to the template and the global variable. You can find all the details in the command reference. So now we change to slide number 5. This is a sample of proving that an performance improvement is good. The actual stylesheet profiling here is for a sample I got from a service, technical service guy who was out there at a customer in Russia and had a performance issue at the customer and called me. And he just sent me stylesheet of the customer and an input file and said, Herman, the performance of this is not good. Do you have an idea? At that time, I did not use the stylesheet profiling, but I had the idea what to replace because of the functionality. But afterwards, I did the stylesheet profiling for that, and the stylesheet profiling did find the exact same issue I found. The issue was that the customer had a hexadecimally encoded string, which he wants to convert to text. On the top right, you see a print of a stylesheet called text-to-text. He had a really huge stylesheet for doing so because he did the customer did the conversion in the stylesheet with the XSLT command. This is somewhat heroic because if you try that from scratch, it's not so easy to get the job done at all. In the next webcast, we will talk about tips and tricks, and one of the tips and tricks will be the different kinds of traversing from different encodings within a stylesheet. For example, in the stylesheet above, the basic trick is to use built-in extension functions to make the whole thing quicker. So if you see the middle line, select DP binary decode, the last command is radix convert. It's a number conversion, and we say convert the input string from 16 to 64. It's not so easy to know that this does actually a conversion of hexadecimal data to Base64 data. Now, with the Base64 data, we can call the DP binary decode function, which decodes the Base64 string and get binary node data in the variable raw. And the trick is, if you just put it into a variable and then copy it out from there, you can access the content. Otherwise, if you directly would output the select, you would just get a data for binary node. That's it. With this trick, you are able to actually retrieve the decoded value, which is the text the customer wanted. And if you look in the left part of the style sheet profiling, then you see on the in the middle, the big highlighted area, the hex-to-text function got called 23,900 times, and in total takes 57,000 milliseconds, so 57 seconds in at all. And the template in line 4, process delimiter, is the template which calls this style sheet, and it gets called 2,500 times and takes another 13 seconds. After the change in the style sheet, the template hex-to-text is so small that it gets inlined, so the complete time now appears only under the process delimiter template on the right side. So you see the process delimiter time goes up from 13 seconds to 20 seconds, but the 57 seconds are completely gone. And essentially this doubles the performance of this customer style sheet, and the customer was fine with it. So style sheet profiling, very important and useful for analysis and improving style sheets. So please switch to slide number 6. Yeah, this is on style sheet tracing. It's a very important concept, and it's really a tool which is in the box. I did not know about that even after working several years for Data Power, and nobody else did know about that, because I got aware of this in figuring out that there was an external tool, the one in the gray shaded area in the lower bottom of this slide. It's a tool called TraceXSLT, which is available on Oliver Becker's homepage at the Technical University of Berlin. It's an old article he wrote back in 2002, I think. In this gray shaded part, I describe how to make use of his technique with Data Power. Then I published that in an internal Data Power forum, and I didn't get any response that we already have this feature in the product. And later, by working on something different, I found out that it's already in the product. And on the top, you see configure tracing of a style sheet. You again have to define a compile options policy in the XML manager and just have to define a matching debug rule. The only problem is that now the output behavior changes for the style sheet. Normal output will not be generated anymore. If you send in traffic, the output will be an HTML page, which you just store and open in the browser, and then you get the trace output of the execution of the style sheet, like displayed on the right part of this page. So you see in the on the left side of this picture, it's always the style sheet which is executed. Then you see the line number which is executed, and on the right side you see what's happening. First statement says, okay, we enter a template on the root element. Then in the second line you see less than out, so the output is beginning. Then the third line says a template is entered called comment prefix. The details of this execution will be described in the next webcast. It's on doing recursion write. It's a sample for that. And finally, on the last line you see the less than slash out greater than the end of the output. very important technique, and it's one of the two techniques which is in the box since a long time and nobody knows about, and like being a data for archaeologists, not just identifying these old tools. Next slide, please. We are now on slide 7. Now I want to say a little bit about the different data power XML data processing modes. There are two modes which are very common in different XSLT processors out there. These modes are document object model and simple API for XML model, which is called in short SAX. In data power, we have a third model, so-called streaming model, which is not available. Part of it is available in some other XSLT processors, but a specific mode I will talk about in detail later, the so-called partial streaming, is not available anywhere else but in data power. So document object model is very easy to explain. The XML document will be completely written into the memory, and the XML tree will be generated in memory. After the tree is built, the application program processes the data, and it may be several traverses of the XML tree which are needed to generate the output, and then after that, the output is generated and sent to the output. In the SAX model, it's different. As soon as the first part of the input data arrives, they will be processed and directly sent to the output. This is really cool from a memory consumption aspect. The problem here is that not that much actions are streamable at all. You can find the details in the document Optimizing Through Streaming, which is a very old and good document of data power, and which is available under the documentation website for data power. And under the link, if you click on the link on the slide. The third model is a streaming model, and one of the reasons why a style sheet may not be streamable in the SAX mode is that the use of the data is too complex. Streaming, or SAX-like streaming, requires that each part of the input is read exactly one. And think of a big list of products, for example, where the transformation for one product is a little bit complex, so that one part of the product has to be read in several times during the transformation. This does not allow a SAX-like streaming behavior, but data power's partial streaming mode is just doing it reads in one product, then does a complete processing in a DOM-like fashion, like the DOM model above, but only on this little product. And after the output was generated, the complete memory is given away. And this model allows for the flexibility of the DOM model and the storage advantage of the SAX model. We will see two examples of that. Slide number 8, please. Here we will talk about SAX-like streaming. The style sheet on the right side is streamable. But it's only streamable because I commented out a little section in the style sheet in the lower template. That commenting out was necessary because you see the first XSL value of select name from dot accesses the current node. And then after the comment, the XSL value of select dot accesses the current node again. And that's exactly what is not allowing for SAX-like streaming. So this style sheet, after commenting out this little line, is streamable. And on the left lower side, you see sample output, which is generated. So the input is a big XML document, and the output is just a text version of the different fields, and the different fields are separated just by a line break. So the left part of the document output would be the output of the complete style sheet with the commented out section, and the right part is just the part of that output. It's for demonstration purposes, so this is no problem. And as you see, the IDs of the documents are from 0 to 999,999. So it's 1 million product element. And in order for you to easily make use of this style sheet, the script for generating arbitrarily big XML files, as well as the style sheet itself, are available in the appendix of this presentation. So if you send this, any big XML file generated with the script through the data power box, and you will watch for the memory, the used memory on the box, you will see no noticeable increase of memory, but the complete transformation will be done without problems. So slide number 9, please. This is a slightly modified style sheet. I modified it in order to have a simple sample for partial streaming. This style sheet is not streaming with Duxilite because we now have a choose, which has conditions and different execution paths for the different outcomes of the test. So you see on the style sheet on the right page, the XSL when test contains, they checked whether the state field of a record is one of Canada, New York, or Wyoming. In that case, a reduced amount of information is outputted. Otherwise, the full amount of fields is outputted. And on a single row element, the state element must not be the very first element. It can be any element, and it even can be the last element of the row. And it's too late to make the decision at that point because the former elements have already been read and should have been outputted or not, and the decision could not be done. So what's happening here is that this part, the processing for a single row of the output will be compiled, and this is executed for each row, but the rest is green, so the memory consumption is very low. And to give you an idea what the compiler does, on the top right you see a diagram which is generated by the DataPower XML compiler for developers, which shows the different paths which were generated. On the very top, you see two gray-shaded boxes. That's the iteration in the record, in the row, for the state field. After this iteration is done, you see a case and a test, and with that note, you have a left and a right follower. On the right side, you see the 7 groups with 3 gray-shaded boxes. So this is the output for each of the 7 fields in the otherwise statement below, and on the left side you see 4 groups of gray shaded boxes which are iterating through the row elements and outputting the 4 elements of the first part in the test XSL1 block of the style sheet. Finally, the output for all of them is the same. The last line, XSL text, outputs a new line character into the output, and this is the node in the middle below the diagram and where most execution paths join. So again, you can send millions documents with millions of records through the box and no real memory increase. So now we want to switch to slide number 10. That's very important. I said we don't have much actions which are streamable. The details can be found in the optimizing for streaming document. Actually, the transform action is streamable, the transform binary action is streamable, and the schema validation is streamable. No other action is streamable. And even for the binary transformations, the binary transformations are only streamable if they are in the old Contigo FFD mode. WTX transformations are not streamable at all. But even if you meet the requirement that your policy is streamable in principle, there might be reasons within a style sheet why style sheet is not streamable. And it's not so easy to find out the reason for that. And the reason is if you want to have streaming, you enforce this by having a compile options policy. Again, all interesting stuff for the compiler is configured in a compile options policy. You have to define a streaming rule or an attempt streaming rule. If you want to be sure, just define a streaming rule which enforces streaming. and then you will get an error message in case it's not streamable. And if you want to determine whether your style sheet is streamable, you use a streaming rule, you send any traffic against the service, and in case the style sheet is not streamable, you would just get a generic error in the log. That's because we are a security device and don't want to give away too much information to people on the outside of Data Power. Then you have to know where to look. And this is the second time I worked as a Data Power archaeologist. I got okay to implement this feature and found out that it's already in the product. You just have to switch to the status, XML processing style sheet status in WebGUI, and just inspect the style sheet and row, in this example, the fourth row, and then you look up the compiler log column, which is the rightmost column of this picture here, and it says, error at local number.xsl line 5, and the reason is also given, the XSL number statement of that style sheet is not streamable. So you get a good diagnostic and can rework your style sheet in order to make it streamable. Okay, this finishes the section on Data Power XML processing. We will now continue with slide number 11. This is the so-called XPath tool, which is available as a built-in tool in Data Power. It's somewhat tricky to actually get it if you don't have a bookmark for it. So apply the trick of the very first slide and just once open it, bookmark it, and then you have it. It's an interesting tool. If you see on the very front, there is an URL of sample XML document on the top, and you can either select a file on the file system of Data Power, or you can upload a file, for example, to local, in this case, log.xml. After you upload that file, it will be displayed in the lower box. So the content of log.xml is displayed in the bottom part of this screenshot. And if you then click on any part of this XML document, in the example here, you see that the log is surrounded by a rectangle. That's because it was selected and I clicked on log, you will get the XPath, which is accessing exactly that log element. So you see in the middle part, the XPath, you get a slash star, which means slash from the root element star, a node, then a predicate, which says the namespace URI is envelope, and the local name is envelope, and then you get slash star, which is a body element, and finally, you get a slash style sheet status, slash log in the third line, which is the end of the addressing of the XPath. You can also generate the XPath by yourself, but a little change, a little mistake, and it does not match what you want. This tool allows you to get an XPath statement, which is correct, and you can use this as a start. You can then modify it in a way you like. Okay, switch to slide number 12. So now we will visit some tools which are not available built-in with Data Power, but which are available elsewhere. Slide number 13, please. Yeah, this is the complementary tool to the XPath tool with big capital letters. It's a tool we had available for developers for a long time, and it's usable to gain information for XML and XSL files. You apply it to an XML or XSL file and you give it an XPath, and as a result you will get all the nodes or the information matched by the XPath expression. It can be even a count expression where you just count the number of nodes or something like that. The problem was that there was in our internal tool was a component which couldn't be published. And I said that that's not fine because even our level 2 support people, we couldn't give that tool. And so I found a little workaround solution which I published on the developer web Data Power forum. The solution consists of style sheet, xpath.xsl, and of a shell script, xpath. which are available in the developer groups posting, and the link is below this slide. And the style sheet you see in the top right, essentially just the shell script just attaches the append, the XPath expression as a comment to the original XML document, and then the XPath.xsl extracts this comment, the very last comment, and does a dynamic evaluate on this. So if you look into the style sheet in the template matching slash the line starting with XSL copy of select dyn evaluate, from the right you see the searching for a slash comment. This is any comment in the complete XML file. Then we have a predicate to the XPath function last. So we will match the very last comment. Then from the very last comment, we apply the string function, which converts it to string. And that's exactly what's needed to as argument to the dynamic evaluate function, which evaluates this XPath expression on the XML document. So here are some examples. The first is the tool applied to itself. So XPath with string from / star means / star is any node, then the predicate name equals XSL copy of, so any XSL copy of in the input document, and /select is the select attribute of it, and this select attribute, the value of that, converted to string is the output. And if you look in the style sheet on the right side, you see that there is exactly one XSL copy of node. It's exactly the line we talked about previously. And the select attribute has the content dyn evaluate until the last parenthesis. And that's exactly the output of this execution. This can be used to get just insight into style sheet. I made use of this for an interesting PMR I had to work 1.5 years ago, got a customer style sheet which watchdogged. Watchdog means that a style sheet executes for 10 minutes without finishing. DataPower considers this as a problem and just terminates the style sheet. No style sheet is allowed to run for more than 10 minutes on DataPower. And that's okay because normal style sheets are in the millisecond range, and even if you are doing big processing, it's in the low minutes and not in the 10-minute range. Finally, I got this style sheet running on a 9004 new hardware box, the 9003 box the customer reported the problem on, did to a watchdog. On 9004, the style sheet completed its processing after 8 minutes. So I had no idea why is 8 minutes good or not good, and I did some analysis, and I found a huge number of XSL for each statement in this style sheet. And so I used this XPath tool to count the number of XSL for each statement, but not all XSL for each statement, but after the count you see /star, any node from the beginning, whose name equals XSL for each, and then below that node, anywhere below /star, another node, matching XSL for each, so another for each, a nested for each, and then another for each, and another, and another, and another, and the whole thing is 24 levels deep. And to my real surprise, the number of 24 levels deep for each statement was 4 in that style sheet. That was not the reason why this style sheet took 8 minutes. Also, this construct was used 738 times in the style sheet. And that was not the reason for the 8 minutes. The reason was that two of these for each loops iterated over more than 2,000 elements, so taking 4 million elements at least for these two loops. And that was the reason we used 8 minutes. So now the question was, what is 8 minutes, good or bad? And so I used another server with comparable hardware and executed the same style sheet with Texan and with XSLT proc, and they generated the exact same output, but the output of Texan took 4 hours and 5 minutes, and the output of X30 POC took 6 hours and 7 minutes. So data power 8 minutes was really cool, more than a factor of 30, and I knew that I was working for the right product. The last sample is, you know, data power is different management interfaces. One is called so-called SOMA interface, the XML management interface. You can send management requests as XML state files to the box, and you get the result. And if you send, for example, get status requests to the box, you get an XML file back, and if you apply this XPath, you can get the response, the status, and the stylesheet status, and the log entry, and the predicate text is true only for strings which are non-empty. And so this XPath expression will extract all the columns of the compiled stylesheet which have either a warning or an error, because normal stylesheets are, for this, this column is just empty, and you don't get them. So this is quite useful. Now, slide 14, please. There are different kinds of scripting for data power. First statement is very important. The preferable way of scripting data power is doing it over the XML management interface. And we have a really good red paper on this topic by Rolf Wittig. He's a level 2 support person in the room next to my room here in the Böblingen Lab in Germany. You can just download this red paper under the link, and it's really good. It gives you all the details. The next kind of scripting which is possible is you can execute scripts which are which contain CLI commands if they are stored on the box. You just store the script you like, as for example, as local script CFG. You open a CLI session to the local box and just execute the CLI command exec local script CFG. That's it. All the steps in the script will be executed in succession. You can do the same from an externally from data power by using the so-called netcat command, for example. In short, it's NC, and it's available on Linux or Cyclone systems if you are running on Windows. And you have just a file, which is depicted on the right part of the slide, cli.txt. It contains the username, stamv, stammw, my name, for example, password, geheim, then the domain you want to enter, which is default, then some CLI commands like show mem, show CPU, and finally you have to execute exit because you want to return from the execution. And you can just send this file to the data power box, to the telnet board. The statement you need there is the execute, the NC, your box, telnet port, less than CLI text. So this less than is just a redirect of the CLI.txt, which is sent to the telnet port of your box. But make sure that this is only an internal interface where you open the telnet service because of security consideration. The last is something which is really interesting. Not sure whether it's useful, but it's good to know that it's possible. You can even execute CLI commands from within a style sheet. So within a style sheet in data power, while it is executed, you can generate a file like the CLI.txt on the fly based on input data. And then you can send this file over the TCP protocol, which is available on the backside on data power, to the telnet service. And in this case, the telnet service has to listen only on the localhost interface, or 127.0.0.1, which is fine because the stylesheet is running on the same box. And you will get back the output of the execution of the CLI command. And this is binary stuff. And if you click on the developer doc article below the slide, you will see that there is a stylesheet called post-telnet, which does the magic of just removing the binary stuff in the response, and you get a good normal text output back, which you can process further in the stylesheet. So next slide, 15, please. The customer had the problem that he accessed web service on Google, and the response from Google, the request to that web service contained UTF-8 data. At the point data for Convert HTTP-8 action was implemented 5 years ago, there was no standard in how to provide the query parameters of the HTTP form to data power. And so data power made the assumption that the encoding is ISO 88591. So if you have UTF-8 encoding in the XML form data, you have a problem, and that was a problem of the customer. And there's a workaround, and you can get the workaround by clicking on the link below the slide. It's a tech note, and it contains just a style sheet doing the exact same thing as the convert HTTP action. And this style sheet is interesting for two reasons. The first is to help you out with the convert HTTP action not being able to process UTF-8 URL encoded URIs currently. With the style sheet, you can do the same processing as needed. And the second is, it's quite interesting to see how different data power extension functions may be used. So the main aspects of the workaround are how do I access the URL of service gets called. It's just accessing DP variables from var service UI, so you get the string, the UI string. Then we have to tokenize after the query part. So we use a str colon tokenize function, and we get the substring from the URL after the question mark, and we tokenize by the ampersand character. So we get every single query variable equals value separately, and then the trick is to use the built-in extension function str colon decode UI, which is just applied to the part after the equal sign, which is the value, which is UTF-8 encoded, and the decode UI function does the decoding for UTF-8 strings. And that's a good example. Very important is the link to the extension functions catalog. Just have a look at it. It contains many, many useful functions which makes your life in developing new style sheets easier. Slide number 16, please. Maybe change? No? Thank you. Oh, yeah, that's interesting feature. On the previous slide, we talked about convert HTTP, which is the action you should use to process HTTP form data. This works fine for most of the stuff, but if you look on the top, in the middle of the top, you see a screenshot of an HTTP form with an upload field. So you can browse files on your local file, on your desktop file system and upload it. And this is not currently supported with the convert HTTP action. And I found out that it's easy with the data power possibilities to make this work. The var form tool, I called it, posted on the developer works forum under the link below. SWA is abbreviation of soap with attachments. That's what data power is able to process, and it contains of MIME boundaries that are very long strings that, which are unique as separators in the soap with attachment file. We have content types, and the content type of soap with attachment is multipart related. We have content IDs for most of the sections, and the section can contain arbitrary content, including binary content. But the very first action has to be soap XML format. What we get from the if we click on the submit, is we get a wrong content type, multipart form data, and we don't get content IDs, but content dispositions for the section. And the swap form tool now does really simply, it accepts non-XML data, then it replaces the content type from multipart form data to multipart related, then it replaces all content dispositions by the content ID, and then it prepends a root section with dummy soap message in case the first field does not contain soap content. And after these conversions, the output of this non-XML service is selfish attachment, which can be processed by data power, like as you would have sent the selfish attachment data correctly in the first place. On the top right, you see a simple application of this technique. The simple application gets the selfish attachment converted data from the SparForm service. It has a transform action, the style sheets you see on the top right, and then a trip attachment action, and that's it. Trip attachment is important because otherwise you don't get back just XML, but also the complete binary stuff you don't want to see. So trip attachment just removes the attachment in this case. And the example, you can look into the details afterwards. You see the uploaded photo is just it's choosing the query parameter encode equals hexbin, which does an hexadecimal encoding of the binary data because otherwise we cannot process it in XML. In the middle, the email section just extracts the correct test 1.23 by applying the technique I showed in the very first slides for the hex-to-text conversion. And the last thing is the content of the submit button is displayed in Base64, so you can see the different arguments of the encode you can use. So slide number 17, please. So here we are coming to the last really content slide. It's on technique called embedded style sheets and how to process them on data power. First of all, this embedded style sheet is happening with a processing instruction. And while data power has a transform using processing instructions, they are not used by many customers at all. But even we are having this action, the support for embedded style sheets out of the box is not given. If you look on the style, the XML file on the top right, you see something. The processing instruction is the second line starting with XML style sheet. The type is text XSL and the href, the reference, is a local reference to style 1. If this is an external reference, it works very well with data power out of the box. But for local references, there's a little workaround which needs to be applied. And what does this mean, style 1? You see below in this catalog, is the beginning of the XML, and in the XML data, there is embedded an XSL style sheet. So you have the style sheet, which has to be applied to the data inside the data itself. And to be accessible, the XSL style sheet needs an ID attribute called style 1. And the only thing you have to do is to use the so-called extract using XPath action. With this, in the fifth bullet, you see a really long XPath expression. This XPath expression extracts exactly the XSL style sheet by the ID, referenced by the ID. And if you do that, place it in the context and execute the context, then you are done. And the details are described below. Slide number 18, please. Yeah, now we will jump very short to the appendix on slide number 19. The first time I used 5-point font in a presentation, but this is not for reading. It's just for copy and paste, enabling you to play around with what was said in the previous slide. Next slide, please, number 20. So in summary, we talked about built-in data power tools, some tools which are not so well known, like, for example, the multi-step probe we didn't talk about today. We talked about data power XML data processing modes. It's very important to know about streaming and to know how to use it. It's not applicable in many environments, but if it's applicable, you definitely need it for very big file processing. Then we talked about different other tools, like XPath tool. You can use that XPath tool with small letters, independent of data power. And in the next webcast, we will continue with tips and tricks. which go beyond the pure data power stuff. Next slide, 21, please. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcasts, like the one you attended today, and access previously recorded presentations. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Notification link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. And now I want to hand over to Joseph.
Thank you, Herman, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the line for questions.
Our first question comes from Chuck Chang. Your line is open.
I have a quick question. You probably have mentioned it before. In terms of scripting data power, did you say data power scripting, which is CLI, is kind of preferred to XML management interface?
No, the opposite direction.
Oh, is it the opposite?
The opposite. The XML management interface is the preferred. There's a simple reason for that. With the XML management interface, you get response codes back, and you can act on success or failure of a XML management command. With CLI, the output of CLI command is intended for being useful to humans reading the message, and it's not so good for automatic processing.
Okay. Oh, gotcha. So in terms of the management interface, I think there are several options. I can use Soma, I can use AMP, do you have any suggestions?
It depends. AMP is for the general box handling, and Soma is for more fine-grained.
Okay.
But I'm not sure whether there is any overlap in the functionality.
Okay. I think what I want to do is create a backup file, a zip file, so I can deploy it to different environments, and I cannot just export it. In addition to what I mean is, in addition to export, I have to include several additional dependencies. So in that case, do you have any suggestion which option I use? Would Soma be a good candidate?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, awesome.
The details you always find in the schema XML management XSD and XML management ops.xsd in the store directory of the appliance. But that's very good explained in the red book I pointed to.
Yeah, I'm reading it. I think that explains the language, the syntax in great detail. It's a good reference. Thanks for your help.
No problem.
Our next question comes from Ravi Banavara. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for your presentation. I have a couple of questions. You mentioned about streaming not being supported for the WTX format, and it's supported for the FFD, the flat file descriptor format. The Contigo format is no longer supported, and I guess the recommendation was to move the maps from the FFD format to the WTX format. So if the maps are migrated, it will error out if streaming mode is required. So my question is, when will streaming for WTX maps be supported?
Oh, that has definitely to be answered by product management. I don't know of any plans for enabling WTX maps being streamable, but the statement on support of Contigo FFD is a little bit different. It is supported. So if you are using a Contigo FFD, it is supported and will be supported, and bugs will be fixed. But there will be no new features which will be enter the product. This hasn't happened any new feature in the last 3 years, and there will be no new features, but bugs will be fixed. In order to get support, the style sheet and maps, FFDs, need to be generated by Contigo Analyst. So if you have a Contigo Analyst licensed by Contigo, you will have the documentation which is necessary by Contigo, And if there's any problem with the execution of a style sheet and a flat file from Contigo on DataPower, it will be either fixed by Contigo or by us. It's not so easy with if you have a WTX problem, you just say, IBM, I have a problem, fix it. And then we have to find out who is responsible and who has to fix. With Contigo FFD files, the problem may be on the Contigo side or on the DataPower side, and sometimes you have to contact us, then us, but finally you will get a fix.
Okay, that was useful. Thank you. I have one question more. Which version of firmware would support the convert HTTP extension function?
Sorry, which HTTP?
Which version of firmware would support the convert HTTP extension function, the UTF-8 conversion?
It's a style sheet, so it should be applicable to any firmware, inclusive 3.7.1.
Okay.
The only thing is, because you have to do non-XML processing, it may be, I didn't test it on an XS40, so definitely on XI50, XM70, and XP60, it should work. It may be work on XS40, I'm not sure about that, because of the data glue issues, the data glue license.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so much.
Okay.
And we have no additional questions.
Thank you, Jackie. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.